We're up to Malachi Perek Aleph, Pasuk Perek Aleph. We are in the middle of the Mefarshim, towards the beginning. Ben Yechabed Av. Okay, we're up to Pasuk Vav and Zayin. Pasuk Vav and Zayin. We learned last week. Okay, we learned with the Mesus and Rashi, and did we do the Radak? I don't believe so. Okay, we did. We did the Mitzudos. Did we even do Rashi? Pasuk Vav. No, we didn't even do Rashi yet. Okay, so let's just review the Pasuk very quickly, and then we'll go right into Rashi. Okay, I'm reading over here. If at any point in time you don't hear me, please let me know. Okay, if at any point in time it goes down, let me know. Page 866, Malachi Perek Aleph Pasuk Vav Bein Yichabed Av V'Eved Adonav Im Av Oni Ayei Chivaydi. Hashem says to Klal Yisrael. In this world, there's a rule. This world, there's a principle where a child is mechabed his father. A slave has fear for his master, even though it does not say the word fear. We discussed this on Friday. Even though it does not say the word fear in the pasuk, it's self-understood. V'eved Adonav, and Hashem now says, V'im'ov Oni. What is your relationship with me? This is a very interesting idea. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us a choice. This alone, this, yeah, if you read deeply into this pasuk, it's a very fascinating concept. We're accustomed to everything in this world being defined. Follow the rules. Many people feel very comfortable when you go into a place and there are rules. These are the rules. Follow the rules. A lot of people, probably the majority of society, feels very comfortable when they are defined. Everything is clearly defined, and they're told what to do, and they follow the rules. Children need that. Yeah. They need that. Okay. They need that. Not necessarily that they want it or they enjoy structure. It. They need it. Children. Let's talk about adults for the moment. I'll talk about adults. Go talk about adults. So adults. You have different types of societies, different types of governments, different types of cultures, and in some of these societies, the rules are clearly defined. And if you step out of line, then there is severe consequences and there's punishment because everything is defined. Then there's an open society where nothing is defined. You do whatever you want. Everything is one big hefkerus. And everyone can do whatever they wish.
Where do you find that?
America.
No.
Where?
What do you? I'm asking you, but it's not America. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. What's the answer?
Maybe in Africa.
Africa. Because then there are places where things are not defined, and then you know that depends. Is that a healthy environment? So it depends. The people are good people. They're disciplined, and they have moral values. Then yeah, it can actually work. It can work out very, very well. If people are you know, they go unchecked and they have no discipline, it can be very, very dangerous. What about Klal Yisrael? So. It's very complicated, but what exactly is the Torah society? If we were today have the opportunity to set up in this world a Torah society where everything would follow halacha, strict halacha, would it be an open society or would it be a very strict society? Well, the answer basically appears to be that there are. It's up to Beis Din, it's up to the community. It's up to the people who are leading. The Torah appears to allow Beis Din to allow the Talmidei Chachamim le'sosu mikol asher yomru l'cha yominu smol. Halach, the Torah gives authority to Beis Din, to the Talmidei Chachamim, to set rules at to the degree where if you step out of line, you're done. But yet, the Torah itself, the guidelines of the Torah are very open. There are Taryag mitzvahs, but the Taryag mitzvahs, half of them are regarding korbanos. The other we have are basic laws of morality, and there are certain basic rules. But the Torah is very open. The Torah is not telling you like, you know, in communist Russia, you take an exam, and they are able to through these exams to figure out where your skills, what type of skill sets you have, and you don't have a choice. If the government decides, not anymore today, but it used to be, the government decides that you are going to be an architect, that's it. There's nothing left for you in life to do than to be an architect. If you're going to be a mathematician, there's nothing left for you to do in life but to do what you want. There's no such thing like that in the Torah. The Torah does not push you around and tell you what to do. The Torah is very, very open. Now, it's so open to a certain degree, and that's what you find over here. What if you ask the average person to define their relationship with Hashem? Tell me your relationship. So I don't know. Let me ask the rabbis. Let me go to my Rav, and my Rav will tell me what it says in the Torah. Is Hashem called a father? Is Hashem called a master? Is Hashem called a husband? Is Hashem called a friend? Is Hashem called a shepherd? I will go to my rabbi. My rabbi knows the entire Torah. He knows what it says, what the Torah tells us. And the rabbi will tell me what the tradition is, how the Mesorah has defined the relationship of us to him. And whatever they tell me, if they tell me that the relationship between Klal Yisrael and Hakadosh Baruch Hu has been a father and a child, that's it. There's nothing more to do. We have to take that model in society of a father and a son and follow it to the extreme. If the relationship between us and Hashem is a husband and a wife, that's it. You have to follow this model to the extreme. So what is it? So this pasuk here tells us it's whatever you want it to be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows enormous room, enormous space for man, Adam, to define his relationship with Hashem. Look what it says here. It doesn't say over here, I'm your father, and therefore you have misbehaved, and the rules in this world of relationships between a father and a son are such and such, and therefore, being that you broke the rules, these are the consequences. It doesn't say that here in the pasuk. The pasuk says, you decide. You decide what relationship you want to forge with me. Bein yechabed av, ve'eved adonav. Now I'm giving you a choice. Ve'im of oni, if you want, it's your choice. If you want to relate to me as a father, ayech avodi. Ve'im adonim oni, if you want to relate to me as a master, aye moiroi. Omar Hashem tzivot. Now get through the next part. This is an incredible insight to how Hashem looks upon us. Hashem is giving you options. Yes. To such a degree, you decide, it's up to you. There are no rules in this matter. Even in the most basic fundamental concepts of Yadus. Yeah.
The choices are not equal choices. Some are better than others.
Why do you say that?
Because the ideal is the father.
Why? There are advantages a slave has that a son does not have. There are advantages.
Yeah, but I think they're outweighed by
so it depends what. I mean, this is not my idea. The Mamari Chazal that tell you that each type of relationship has unique advantages. There's a relationship of a husband and a wife. What a wife can demand, or the benefit that a wife receives from a husband, is different than a child from a father. What a servant receives from his master.
That's not one of our options.
It is an option.
Not
the whole.
As an individual.
Why not? We have.
As a nation, but not as an individual.
I'm not so certain that. There are numerous Memori Chazdal that compare our relationship to Hashem as a husband and a wife.
Yeah, as a nation.
As a nation?
Not as an individual.
Is that, I hear what you're saying. You have to really investigate if that's accurate. There are multiple types of relationships that the Torah presents for us. Hashem is our shepherd. Hashem is our teacher. Hashem is our military leader. Hashem is our husband. Hashem is our father. Hashem is our master. So what is it? Rabbi, I'm confused. I just want to be told what to do. When you go vote, I don't know who to vote for. Rabbi Chol, he sends me an email who to vote for. I go into the voting booth and I took out my phone, and whatever Rabbi Chol told me to vote for, I voted. And then there was one thing Rabbi Chol did not tell me who to vote for. So you know what I did? I filled out the fill-in and I wrote in Michal Miller. I even took a picture to show him. How could you leave me hanging? You left me hanging.
That's right. The rabbi's just going to be just as confused. We ask you, which one is it? You're just as confused.
I myself.
It's, you have, that's exactly the point. It's up to you. Not everything in Judaism is defined. Hashem, by design, is giving you free will. It's not just free will. Oh, should I do a mitzvah? Should I do an aveira? In doing mitzvahs, in doing mitzvahs, in creating your relationship with Hashem, you have options. You have freedom. You have the ability to forge a certain. For some people, they want, they thrive on having a relationship with Hashem as an evet, and some thrive on having a relationship as a son. There's a famous story in the Gemara, I don't remember the names of the Amoraim, where they were davening for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they were davening, nothing doing. And then they call up another guy, you get up, you go to the Amor, you daven for it to rain. He gets up to the Amor, he rains, all of a sudden it begins to pour. So they all start talking and they say, I don't understand, this guy that you called to the Amor, he's nothing special. Well, he's not a big Rashid, he's not a big Talmud Chacham. How come when he got up to daven, 1, 2, 3, but when you, who sit the whole day and learn in this? So he says, because he is, I forgot which word he said, he is an Eved Bifnei Rabbi, I'm like a Ben, or something like, I don't remember the Gemara. We have a different relationship. What does that mean? Isn't it one size fits all? No, it's not. A person has options in the way he comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I once had a conversation, like actually it was 2 weeks ago, between two people. They were talking very, very deep concepts in tefillah. A very, very deep conversation. And when davening the Shemoneh Esrei, these are very holy people, they were talking to each other, I was eavesdropping, how they connect to Hashem. And one was quoting from the Nefesh HaChayim, and one was quoting from, I don't know, maybe it was Breslov Svarah, maybe it was other, I don't know what it was. They were talking very, very deep concepts. And they were basically showing within the conversation that they're contradictory. And there's no compromise. You can't have them both. If you're going to relate to Hashem when you're studying Shemoneh Esrei in this approach, it's inconsistent with the approach of other Gedolei Yisrael. So someone there was listening also. So which one is right? And the answer that he gave them was, none of them are right. You choose what appeals to you. They're both MS. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Whichever approach appeals to you more, go with it. If this concept is something that makes you connect to Hashem, then go for it, even though it's inconsistent with the other approach. That's all what it's about. You.
And Avi says you're nothing, not Ben and not Eved.
It doesn't say you're nothing.
No.
You're in violation. You know that you're nothing. He's saying this manager, what is your relationship with me? If you view your relationship with me as a father, then you're in violation. If you view your relationship with me as a master, you're in violation. But he's telling us indirectly, you have a choice. What?
We
both. Avinu Malkeinu. We say Avinu Malkeinu. We say Avinu Malkeinu. Avinu Malkeinu. We say the 44 Avinu Malkeinu. So Avinu Malkeinu. We say both. Even though we say both, but there's always a principle. There always has to be an ikur and a tafel. You can't have everything. What is the ikur? What is the tafel? Some people, it appeals to them the relationship as an av. Some. And the point here is you have a choice. Judaism does not lock you in. It's not one size fits all. It's not a cookie cutter. You have options. Not everything is the same. There are different varieties, different colors, different strands. And that's what it says here in this pasuk. Bein yichabedav. Hashem says, listen, manavshach. Bein yichabedav. Ve'ev radoinav. Now, let me ask you, what do you want? The im of oni. If you want to relate to me as a father, if you want to relate to me as a master, you have to decide. Omar, you have to decide, and whatever you decide, you have to follow the rules. Next, Omar, Hashem tzvakos lochem hakoyanim boizei shmi. Then we go on to the next part of the pasuk. Hashem says to the koyanim, you, the koyanim, are boizei shmi. You have despised my name. How have you despised my name? Vamartem, No, period. So Klal Yisrael says back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vamartem, you say back to me, Vanevo Zinu Hashemecha, what are you saying, Hashem? Hashem responds, okay, this we spend the whole Friday on, Magishem al Mizmuch Lechem Migo'ol. Hashem answers, you have despised me by offering me a product that is disgusting, that is detestable. You have brought near to my Mizbeach bread that is horrible, that is detestable. Klal Yisrael says back, that's not true. We bring you the best, Hashem. Va'amartem, Bameh Ge'alnucha. How have we despised you? Hashem responds, you know how you have despised me? It's not the actual product, the flour, the water, the bread. It's your attitude towards the service. Be'emorchem, when I hear you say amongst yourselves, Shulchan Hashem, Nivzehu, the table of Hashem is disgraceful. Your attitude towards the shulchan, as we explained last week, the shulchan is a metaphor for the profession. The lechem is the product or the service that is provided by the profession. If you believe, if you are kohanim, and you believe that the shulchan Hashem, that's just a metaphor that this profession of being servants of Hashem, the shulchan Hashem is nivzehu, Hashem responds automatically, in my eyes, the product is disgusting. If you are a mechanic and you have a garage, if you own a factory and you produce cars, and every morning you wake up and you say, this industry is the worst industry in the world. I made a mistake. I never ever should have been an engineer, a mechanical engineer to design and cars. I hate this profession. And even if you go into work every single day and you produce the best automobiles for which you win prizes all over the world, the automobile that you produce in your factory is detestable. Because if you wake up in the morning and you say to yourself, the industry is the worst industry in the world, I have charata, that I devoted my life to this profession, you're doomed. The product that you are producing is a disgusting product, even though you may win prizes. Klal Yisrael says to Hashem, we bring upon the Mizbeach the best of the best, the best possible korbanos. And Hashem saw, so, and therefore, how could you, Hashem, say to us that the bread that we bring on the Mizbeach is migo'ol, is detestable? Hashem says back, it's not the flour, the water, the brick oven, that's not the issue. The issue is your attitude towards your service to Hashem, towards this profession. In your eyes, the Shulchan Hashem is nivzeh. It's a disgraceful profession for a nice young Jewish boy. And even though you're good at it, and you're excellent, and there's no competition, in my eyes, when you come into work and you serve, the product, in my eyes, is called migo'ol. Okay, that's a chazara from what we learned on Friday. Now let's see the Rashi. Rashi, page 866, Bain. We discussed
why Adonim is lower?
No, we did not. We asked the question, but we did not give you an answer. We have yet to discover the answer.
Many
masters.
You can have two masters.
Sure.
There's
only one biological father. You can only have one, except for today, generic engineering, you can have many. Yeah, right, Rambo. Rav Kalman Shaloni is asking a good question.
By the way, I thought halacha is being known that one can't get sold from one master to another. Not allowed. In other words, when the father or the master dies, the son doesn't inherit the slave. It doesn't work that way.
This not by Ivan Ivri, but by every Kanani, this not halte my son, Lubenechem, Macharechem, will rest Sahuza. Every Kanani, every Ivri. Every Ivri, you go free. Every Ivri does not go to the child.
Right.
Okay, but he's saying over here, ordinarily a slave, he's saying a good point, but also a slave, you can have many masters. Adoinim, that's why it's Beloshim Rabim.
They're
partners, right? Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Eved, right? So when it comes to a slave, Rav Kalman is pointing out in the Pasuk above, it says, Im Adoinim Oni, it refers to the master Beloshim Rabim, because a slave can have multiple masters over a period of time or partners. Look, everyone, we refer to Hashem. Hashem is called Elohim. Elohim is B'loshoin Rabim. So everyone has to question, how could it be that we say Elohim? This is a violation of Lo Yelcha Elohim Acherim Alponai. How in the world can we refer to Hashem B'loshoin Rabim, not B'loshoin Yachid? Sometimes, but the word Elohim, Bereshis, in the beginning, Bara Elohim. Es Hashemayim v'es Aretz. So why isn't that a pischa and peh for the Apikoristim to say there's more than one God?
That's the problem.
They pick up on that. So all the commentators answer is that you have to know the language. In order to give power and potency, intensity to an individual, you refer to him b'lashoin rabim. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. There's only one HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yet, it's a style of writing. When you refer to Hashem as the authority, the way you refer to an individual as the ultimate authority is B'Lashoin Rabin. That is why, that's the most basic answer, why we refer to Hashem with the term Elohim and not Elokah, Elohim, B'Lashoin Rabin. So, here, the im adoinim oni, perhaps we can suggest another answer to the question, why is the master here, Brit Meloshon Rabim, is because we're referring to Hashem as the master. And Hashem is not an ordinary master. Hashem is the ultimate master. And just as the first pasuk says Elohim, likewise here it says the im adoinim, Meloshon Rabim. Okay, let's see Rashi. Rashi, pasuk levin zayin bein, yesh olav l'chabirav. A bein has an obligation to give honor to his father. The Chayn Eved has an obligation to give honor to Adonav. It does not say honor or fear. That was the question we asked on Friday. It does not say what type of emotion, what type of service the Eved or feeling the Eved has to his master. And we would expect that if it says the word Yechabed in the beginning of the pasuk, it should be repeated, and it should be as if the pasuk says V'eved Yechabed Adonav. Yet, when the pasuk goes through the details, it says Ayei Mo'ro'i. So we have to assume that even though the word Mo'ro'i is absent in the beginning of the pasuk, it really means Ben Yechabedav. V'eved is V'eved Yiroh Adonav. A slave fears his master. Back to the Rashi. You Klali Yisrael, you are called both. You are both. You are Bonai Vavodai V'Ator now. Im Ovoni Lochem Ayek Vodi. Omar Hashem Tzivokoi. Period. Now we go to the next part of the pasuk. Omar Hashem Tzivokoi Slochem. Hashem says to you, Atem you, HaKohanim, HaBoizimesh Shmi. You Kohanim, you have disgraced my name. V'amartem Bamer Vozinu Kiloimar. Yodati, Hashem continues, I know that when I present this complaint against you, you're going to respond. Shetaymruli, Bamevozinu. How have we disgraced your name? So the answer is, Hare Habizoyon, isn't that Magishim al Mizbuchi, you bring upon my table bread that's Megol, Vamartem, Koloimar, Vim. In other words, Hashem over here is telling us the entire conversation. Rashi over here explains to us, do not make a mistake and think that there was a real conversation going on between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying everything. And Hashem is telling us, this is my complaint. And I know what you're going to say. So here's my response. And I know what you're going to say next. So here's the next, my response. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is presenting us the entire conversation that never really happened. But theoretically would happen if there would be a conversation. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do this. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can play out the entire sequence of events of what would happen had there been a real conversation. But that's what it's saying over here. Let's go. The answer is, Eslechem mizbachacha. How have we disgraced, despised your bread? Ani meshev lochem ki besoyz ge'altem oisi be'emorchem shulchan Hashem nivzehu. What does that mean? Boizem oyu lachlek ish ke'ochev be'menoches uva kodoshem. I told you a whole drush. Rashi is telling us pshat. Okay, pshat always comes before a drush. We should first say the pshat. And Rashi says over here is that you do not distribute, you do not divide, you do not redistribute the wealth equally. Communism. Let's explain. Boizim hayu lachloik ishkiachiv. Shulchan Hashem nivzehu. Boizim hayu lachloik ishkiachiv b'menachos uvekadoshim. You, the oimim me'achar shehu osur lanu lachloik mincha k'neged mincha v'zevach k'neged zevach. Toirach v'amol hu lachloik kol mincha u'mincha bishul k'zayis oy kipol hamagil l'chol echad v'yachad. The thing over here is that it's a burden for us to distribute the food fairly. Let's read these words one more time. B'morchem shulchan Hashem nivzehu. Boizim hayu lachlek ish ki'ochev b'menachos v'gadoshem. It was, obviously Rashi is quoting from, he's quoting over here from the Gemara. It was a burden for the Kohanim to distribute all of the goods, all of the share of the menachos. The oimim, they would say, what would they would say? Here was their complaint. What did they want to do? What did the Kohanim want to do? They wanted to say, listen, you take the entire animal. It's much easier if you will take the entire, this person brought a carbon chatas. So you know what? Take the animal, take it home to your, you can't go home, you have to eat in the Beis HaMikdash. You have this entire animal, and I, the next customer online, I will take his animal. That's easy. Now, that's not the halacha, though. The halacha is every single animal, I don't know these halachas, they're very fascinating halachas, every single carbon has to be divided equally amongst all of the kohanim. That is an enormous effort, to take every single carbon and divide it equally amongst the kohanim that are serving right then and there in the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say, for example, what? And the menachas. So let's say, for example, you have on duty, let's say, 100 kohanim for today. Just make believe. There are 100 kohanim here today, working today in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what they divide. I'm assuming that, you know, they limit the number of kohanim, and they have also, they need a certain minimum in order to make sure all of the korbanos are going to be eaten. So they're today on service, on duty. Today, the shift from Ashmeres HaBoker until sunset is 100 Kohanim. And let's just make it very simple. Today, there are 100 Korbanos being offered. 100 people from Klal Yisrael will show up today to bring a Korban Chatos. So wouldn't it be easy if you have 100 Kohanim working and there are 100 Korbanos, each Kohen will take for himself one Korban Chatos. And that way you don't have to take out your knives and cut everything up and divide and measure. Very easy. But it appears that is forbidden. That is, it is forbidden to do that. If you have 100 korbanos, every single korban has to be divided into 100 parts. And every single kohen is going to get a little piece from 100 korbanos. I'm just giving you a very general example. That is the halacha. That is an enormous effort for the Kohanim to measure, to cut, to divide. Sorry? You're right. The Torah is not demanding that it be done in a way that's impossible. Obviously, there is a system that is possible, but it's a very big burden. It involves a lot of effort, a lot of work.
One gets a thigh, one gets a leg, and it's called thigh and leg.
I don't know the system. I don't know the system. Whatever the system is, I don't know what the system is. Whatever the system is, the halacha demands that every carbon be divided amongst all of the kohanim who are serving there in the mikdash then. Now that is an enormous effort. An enormous amount of labor has to go into creating such a system. It would be so much easier if we make an estimation. We have 100 kohanim serving. We have 100 kohanim. Each kohen gets one animal. There are much easier ways to do things. We always
say, make a goulash.
Can do what?
Make a goulash in the Bible.
A what?
Cook it into a
stew.
A stew? I don't know the system. I'm not going to make Levina anything here, but this is what the writer says. Boizim hoyu, it was a disgrace. It was a disgrace for you to follow the protocol, to follow the procedure. Because in your minds, there was a better way to do it. And if in Shulchan, and to do what it says in Shulchan Aruch is not pleasing in your eyes, so you reject what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Boizim hoyu lachalek ish kiyachiv b'menachos u'v'kodashim. It was a disgrace in your eyes to divide equally in the menachos and the kodashim. V'yomim, you would say as follows. Me'achar, being that shehu osur lanu lachalek mincha k'neged mincha v'zevach k'neged zevach, being that the halach is that we're not allowed to, each one will take an entire carbon if there are 100 kohanim and 100 karbonos, I'll take carbon number one, you'll take carbon number two, he'll take carbon number three. Why should we go through the effort of dividing every single carbon into 100 pieces? Toirach v'amol hu, it is a burden and it is excessive labor. Lachaloik, to divide kol mincha u'mincha b'shvil, and what will the result be? Everyone's going to get a little teeny kezayis. There are 100 kohanim. I'm going to get a little kezayis from carbon A, B, C, D. This is ridiculous. And therefore, to get a kezayis, oy kipola bean, hamagil l'chol echad b'yachad. And this is what, so what did you all do? You just quit. You quit. You did not bother to show up for service. Being that you did not approve the way the service was performed, you had your own ideas, your own methods, and it was not pleasing in your eyes the technique that was being employed in the Beis HaMikdash, you didn't show up. You just stayed away. This is how Rashi learns Pshat in the Pasuk. It's an incredible, I mean, it opens up a whole new world of trying to understand exactly why Takaven is at the Halacha. The argument that the Kohanim are making is a very good argument. Wouldn't it be more efficient that if there are 100 Korbanos and there are 100 Kohanim on duty, each Kohen gets a complete carbon? Why do you have to go and split each carbon into 100 pieces? Whatever the method was. Obviously, there must be a reason. I don't know what the reason is. I mean, we have a basic principle. The pasuk says, V'ochlu oisam asher kupar bohem. Part of the atonement that comes to the petitioner, to the person who did the Avera, is the Kohanim eat the meat. Now, how does that work exactly? Now, by the way, this concept in ancient times of eating the carbon did not exist by the Umay Soilah. This is something in the study ancient religions. There is no other religion, doesn't seem, I mean, I'm not familiar with all the religions.
Only an Ola,
where the person actually eats.
You eat the carbon. The whole purpose of the carbon is to bring it to the god. Whether you're dealing with people who are pagans, they're bringing sacrifices to the sun, the moon, to stone, to wood, or they were bringing even sacrifice to Hashem.
Finish of the Korban Pesach.
What?
Finish of the Korban Pesach.
They ate it. They couldn't get over this. They couldn't get over this. This is something that is totally foreign. Now, on top of that, go even further. The pasuk says that is the moment of atonement. Now, let's not get carried away. The ikar kapara is the zrika sadah. That's the ikar. No one's gonna. And if you bring the blood on the mizbeach and the meat gets lost, or it becomes tamei, or something happens, the person has fulfilled his obligation. He does not bring another carbon. But when the meat has not gotten lost, the meat is present, and the Kohanim eat the basar, there is an additional degree. It's like your booster shot, right? It's like a booster kapara. The ikar kapara is the zrika sadam, and a booster kapara is the ochlu oisam asher kupar bohem. It's a pasuk. When the kohanim eat, ha kohanim oichlem, the haboolim mischaprin. When the kohanim eat the meat of the carbon, the owners, they gain atonement. So obviously, if the Torah created such a system where every single carbon is divided amongst all of the kohanim that are working, that are serving at that time, whatever the system is all about, the Torah wants to maximize the atonement by having multiple kohanim eat from your carbon. If you would do it the way you suggest, these Kohanim are suggesting, listen, we have 100 Kohanim working today, we have 100 Korbanos that need to be eaten, let's give one Kohen, every single Kohen, he gets one carbon. V'zehu. Okay, that's very nice and good, but you're lacking in what you're trying to accomplish. The bring of the Korbanos is not lunch. This is not lunch and dinner and breakfast. This is not a hotel. The Beis HaMikdash is not a hotel. The Beis HaMikdash is here to atone for the sins of Klal Yisrael. When a person comes to bring a korban, it is a much greater atonement if all of the Kohanim participate in his atonement, not just one Kohen. By the Kohanim saying, oh, what a tircha, what a burden. The bottom line is, the food has to be in our stomach. Oh, it's all about you. It's all about your lunch, your dinner. It's just all about you. It's not about the person that's bringing the carbon. You're losing focus of what you're here for. You're not here for lunch. You're here to bring atonement upon this person. And to maximize his atonement, if we'll have 100 Kohanim eating from this person's, that will create a different mindset. It will create a whole different experience for the sinner to gain atonement. But you, Kohanim, no, you don't. That's not what your agenda is. You didn't come today to work in the Beis HaMikdash because you could care less about someone else, that you should care about his atonement. You came here today because you want to have a good lunch. My one day, this is my day when I serve. You serve in the Mikdash, you have a delicious breakfast, lunch, and supper. And if we're going to have breakfast, lunch, and supper, I don't want to have a little pieces. I want to have one big steak. I don't want to have this. That goes to show you're not here. You're not serving for the right reason. That's what it means. It's lechem migo'ol. This is the way Rashi learns Pshat the Pasuk.
Also, there is a play of words here. Baz, the shalal. What do you do with the shalal? You divide it. Each one gets
spoils of war. Gets this divided.
The baz and they make it
very good. You say the play of words. Lashon, Nava Lashon, beautiful. The biza in war is you divide. You divide. And here, instead of you dividing, you're boizei shemi. Hashem is saying, instead of treating the korbanos as real biza, where everyone divides it, you are, let's play on the word, we're taking the same letters with another meaning, you are bringing a disgrace upon my name. It's a play on the word. Beautiful. There's a very nice show you're saying. It's biza by definition means to split, to divide, and it also means disgrace. So Hashem is saying what you're supposed to be doing is bringing atonement for this to the sinner by dividing. You don't want to do that because you don't care about the sinner. You care about yourself. By caring about yourself, you're being mevaze my name. It's a disgrace to Hashem's name.
I think biza is closer to disgrace than divide, because when you're able to take something from the other without the other being helpless to stop you, that is a disgrace. That's the spoil.
Okay, it goes together. It goes together. So Rashi here says that when it came to the mincha, he says they would get the size of a bean, a teeny little amount. Because of the fresses. That was during bad times. That was when there was extortion, when they were towards the end, when they were people that were evil.
There was
corruption. That's the time of corruption. But during the good times, obviously there's a lot more to it. There was a system in place. What does this mean exactly?
There was corruption.
There was corruption. There were fressers. There were people that wanted everything, and they were powerful, and they were mighty, and they were just plain pasha corruption.
That's why
once they saw there was corruption, the tsnun, the people that were sincere, they decide, you know what, I'm not interested. I don't want to be part of this. That when there are empty cans, make a lot of noise. All right, so we have, obviously there's a lot more going on over this system over here. Obviously was a lot more complex than just like I told you, 100 people, 100 korbanos. Obviously, Mr. Rils, you're right, it's impossible. I mean, obviously an assessment had to be made. What exactly is the situation? How many people are working? How many korbanos are being offered? And there must be some system in place, obviously.
Didn't he represent all the kohanim when he received the...
Yes and no. Yes and no. It's impossible for all the kohanim to serve on the same time. So there were 24 mishmaris.
Who do you represent? The people eating?
So you're saying he deserves more?
No, I'm saying that if you gave just that carpet to him, he represents the people. Yes, that's true.
But we want other kohanim as well. We don't want to just give it to one single Kohen.
It should have to be divided by every single person sitting
there. Of course not. The Kohanim were divided into 24 mishmaros. They lived in 24 groups, 24 cities. Each mishmar had its own city. And each mishmar worked, they alternated, they rotated. Every 24 weeks, a mishmar was called up for duty. They would come to the Beis HaMikdash. They had dormitories for them. They had a hotel for them. They lived for 1 week in the Beis HaMikdash, and each mishmar in and of itself was divided into six groups. And each group worked one day. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The Bote Av. The Bote Av, the Mamadis were the Yisraelim, corresponding to the 24 mishmaris of Kohanim. There were 24 mishmaris of Levim. Mayor Apple, what is your mishmar? There were 24 mishmaris of Levim, and there were 24 mishmaris of Yisraelim, like Miluim. You called up Mamodos. Those are the Mamodos. The Mamodos, and every 24 weeks you were called to serve. What did you do as a Levi? Well, the Levim had their mission. They did Shmira, Shira, and Shmira. Primarily, those are the two primary roles of the Levim, and the Yisraelim would fast and daven. While the Kohanim were eating delicious meals, the Yisraelim were fasting. They fasted Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and they would daven. They would daven, and they would, and all these are all found in the Mishnayis and the Masechta Tainis. They would fast, that Hashem should accept the Korbanos of Klal Yisrael. So the Yisrael, Kohanim ba'avodasam, u'levim biduchanam, the Yisrael b'ma'amodah. Everyone in Klal Yisrael was in one of 24 groups. 24 groups. When we look in the kinos, we'll go through. There are two kinos on Tisha B'Av that dwell upon the 24 mishmaros of Kohanim. There's the famous kino of Chavatzelus Hasharoin. Chavatzelus Hasharoin, where it actually tells you the name of all of the 24 mishmaros. And then in the first kina that we recite, Tisha B'Av morning, Shavas, Sudu, Meni, Shemuni, Oivrai, woven into that kina are code names for all 24 mishmaris. So there are two kinos in Tisha B'Av that actually mention, one explicitly and one indirectly, the 24 mishmaros of Kohanim. Okay, let's go further. Let's now see the Radak. The Radak Pasuk Vav, page 867. Bein yichabeda v'evad adonav, perish yira es adonav. So here we touch upon what we said before, what we mentioned before about the slave. The missing word, the Radak immediately picks up, and there's a missing word in the Pasuk, the slave fears his master. Like it says in the end of the pasuk, if you really fear me, where is it? If you really respect me, where is my fear? The fainting benison ha al bira amir li yakara. The Targum explains that a child, it is correct to give honor, yas abba, his father, the avda limitchal. Well, limitchal means to fear, min kadam ribone, before his master. Now, here's what the Radak is saying. Why don't you say the reason why it says this is because the mitzvah is a pasuk, kabed es avich of yasimecha, and a slave. How come? Why is Radak saying? Oh, the reason why. A ben is mechabed is av, is midere chaseichel. It's logical. Hamafursam. The goyim do this also. Who doesn't know that it's roy for a bein to mechabed es ovid? Now, if you go into a real yeshivisha shmuz by a big baal musar, let's say you'll go to some, you know, go to yeshiva and someone in Bnei Barak, and you'll hear someone, a real fiery shmuz, I guarantee they're going to tell you, they'll tell you, why do you give cover to your father? Why? It's because it's the right thing to do. It's the right, wrong. It's because the Torah tells you to give cover. Kabeid es avicha aviyasimecha. It's not because it feels good. It's the right thing. Once you're going to start dealing with your feelings and your emotions, will come a time in the world, a woke society. We'll come to a generation, a woke society, where who says my feelings are right? We have to redefine, rewire our feelings of what's right, what's wrong, what's called MS, what's sheker. So don't ever, this is a typical schmooze you're going to read in the real yeshivisha type of circles. Don't ever do anything based upon if it feels good. It's the right thing to do. Once you go down that path, you're looking for trouble. Because
humanitarian.
So today, what's going on in America today
is feelings as opposed to facts.
Facts can be redefined. What's called a fact?
That's part of the problem.
George Washington is now a terrorist. Half of this country, I don't know what the numbers are, but George Washington is a terrorist.
And a slave owner.
A slave owner is a terrorist. He's like the worst of the worst. He's worse than Haman, George Washington. Go out, see what's going on in America. That's what's going on.
Well,
you have to get a statue.
The George Floyd bridge instead of George Washington.
We're getting there.
Need those pieces of paper.
We're getting there. You'll see, we're getting there. That's where we're going. But for the last 245 years, it wasn't like this. Yeah, because it felt, it was sickly. It made sense that we should be Machabe George Washington. It only made sense. Now it doesn't make sense.
The father of our country.
Right, but not anymore. Now he's a terrorist. Now, right?
It always was like that.
So when you look at it, when you start going down this path, you're looking for trouble. So in the yeshivish world, when they'll look at the mitzvah of kabed es avicha v'yasimecha, they'll always tell you, the reason why you give cover to your father is because the Torah tells you to. That's where it starts. After you understand that, you're doing it because the Torah told you, now allow your emotion to enhance the commandment to give honor to your father. The Torah says, "Kabed es avicha v'yasimecha." That's a hard fact. That's an instruction, whether you like it or not. Now, once you're going to do it, because you don't have a choice, now allow the emotion that's normal, that's acceptable, that is self-understood, to flow from your heart and give kavod me'ahava. But if you're going to give kavod to your father, you're going to start the Bible. Forget about the Bible. Take it away. I don't want to know about the Bible. I'll give kavod to my father because I like my father. I love my father. He was good to me. He bought me toys. He was nice to me. It's very nice. It's very good. But it's very dangerous. So I'm just asking a question now. I'm thinking out loud with you. I'm very surprised that the Radak here, when he reads this pasuk, and he says, Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, Bein Yichabed Of. The Radak is, why? Why is a Bein Mechabed an Av? So what would you expect if you went to Bnei Brak, into the Kol Chazoynish in Bnei Brak? They would say, you know why a bein is mechabed an av? Because the Torah tells a bein to be mechabed the av. Right? Isn't that what they would say in Brisk?
This is what the Talmud says. Ben Amir.
So what does Amir mean?
Amur. He was
commanded?
He was told.
Commanded?
Torah.
By Hashem? Okay, I don't know. Okay, then it's very interesting. That's taka, what it means, Amir. Then it's you are Amor, you were commanded. Not because you were told. You were told. So I'm just thinking out loud with you, and I'm saying over your parish, Yira es Adonav, Kumosh Omar Ayim Aroi, the Chetik Mgon, and then he goes on to say, Uva Omar, Ben Yechabidav, Yehavi Adonav, Zer Miderech HaSeichel. What? It is, it's also, the Goyim also, we know, Dam Ben Asina. Dam Ben Asina. Esav was Mechabed his father. But Esav was really Jewish. They don't make Jews like Esav. Esav is a very good Rav Chudner. Rav Chudner really, was super brilliant. He defined Esav in a very, very, very fascinating way. Rav Chudner defined Esav was a Jew. He really was a Jew. The only difference between Esav and Yaakov was Esav, he left. See, Yaakov, after Yaakov, Yaakov's children can't leave. There's nothing you can do anymore after Yaakov and Esav to renounce your Judaism. You can be baptized every single day. It doesn't make a difference. It's like going to the mikvah. Adrabah, you go to the baptism, at least you went to the mikvah.
So what's the definition of a Jew then?
What? Your mother is Jewish. That's it.
Yeah,
your mother is Jewish.
The ancestry of the name Jew, where does it come from?
Yehuda.
Yehudi.
Yehuda, so it doesn't say Ben Abraham.
Once we came to Matan Torah, the laws were established. If your mother is Jewish, there's nothing you can possibly do.
So it began with the 12 tribes.
Right. No, but it began with Avraham. The difference is Avraham was again, this is probably Rav Chudner's most famous thing that he ever said. Correct? We actually won the loyal Talmidim of Chaim Golem, Rabbi Eliezer, Liederfried. Rav Chudner said Rav Avraham was the first convert. He wasn't born a Jew. He wasn't an FFB. You know all the code words? There's an FFB, from birth, Abiti, Baal Tshuva, then there's some other all these other, I don't know all the codes, all these code words. Whatever, no, don't go there. There is, Avraham was the first convert. Yitzchak was the first Jew to be born a Jew. Avraham was a BT, a Baal Teshuva. He wasn't born, he was a Ger, even a different level. He was a Ger, he was a Goy. He was a Ben Noyach, Avraham. He was a Ben Noyach. His father was the master of idolatry. His father had a factory. They put out on the market, they conquered the market, selling idols. And Avraham was a convert. Yitzchak was the first Jew to be born a Jew. But Yitzchak, if he wanted to be born a Jew, right? Yaakov, now here is it, Yaakov was the first one who decided to remain a Jew. How does this expression, I already forgot the whole thing when he says, to remain a Jew. Let me explain this in this form. Esav decided, I don't want to be a Jew. I decide, I'm done. I'm finished. I'm born a Jew, but you know what? It's not for me. I want out. You want out, the door is open, goodbye. Once you leave, you are no longer a Jew. If you want to come in, you have to start from the very beginning, like Avraham Avinu, and become a convert. Yaakov was the first one to decide, to make a decision, I want to remain a Jew the rest of my life. And that decision, I want to remain a Jew the rest of my life, overflowed to his descendants, that they don't even have a door to walk out. A Jew can be baptized, can convert to Islam, he can do whatever he wants. Whatever he wants, a Jew is a Jew. There's no such thing as leaving Judaism. Who is the one that created that reality that a Jew can never leave? Yaakov Avinu. He was the one that created this reality in Judaism. Esav had that option of doing the same thing, but he decided, I don't want. Esav walked out the door. It's irreversible. Esav is now a goy. You want to come back? okay, you can come back, but you come back as a convert. You don't come back as a Jew. Yaakov, he was born a Jew. Well, Yitzhak was born a Jew, but Yaakov, his contribution to Judaism is that you can't leave. You're locked in. You're literally locked in. There's nothing you can possibly do to escape from Judaism. Now, even though that's true, by the way, you can't escape. This we always talk about. This is a lot of controversy. Jews who do, at least on the outside, convert out, they have a different status. Okay, this is a very controversial thing. Today we live in America. No Jew can be left behind. We live in a mindset today, Chabad, they'll trace your lineage. If they discover that you're a Jew, they'll go knocking on your door, and they won't take no for an answer.
What did Yaakov do to establish this that you can't practice?
I don't have an answer. I don't have the exact words. Rav Kudner develops this. Rav Kudner develops this. I don't have the exact answer. He did something. He has a very an elaboration exactly how in his lifetime he established this reality that was bequeathed to his descendants. It's impossible to leave. Now, even though it's impossible to leave Yisrael, Aval Pishachoto Yisrael, over history, there's been a very big debate about our obligation towards those type of Jews. In this generation where we live in today, the attitude is, we can trace your lineage, that your mother is Jewish. Elvis is Jewish. Elvis's mother is Jewish. Okay? Elvis is a Yid. So if Chabad was, if he was here now, maybe, where is Elvis? Maybe he's walking Avenue M somewhere.
He left the building.
Maybe he's walking Avenue M somewhere. If Chabad will find him, boy, well, they'll sit him down, they'll chain him down, and they'll make him into a Yid. They'll make sure they squeeze out of him some money. What? Could be. But that's the attitude we live in today. It is clear as day that before World War II, a good segment of Klal Yisrael did not look at it like that. There's no question if a Jew goes off the derech, he converts, he's Jewish. Listen, he's Jewish. But our duty to him before World War II was, you're gone. There were no Chabad houses before World War II. The attitude was not interesting. You're out. It was a very different mindset. I read recently a very fascinating letter. I don't remember the names. One of the Gedolei Yisrael lived before the war. I don't know the dates. It was a very challenging time, and it was very challenging that your children should be shomer Torah mitzvahs. And he was writing a letter to his descent, to his children, grandchildren in America. This probably goes back to the beginning of the 20th century, the end of the 19th century. And he wrote all their names. And it's very shocking. It's really a shocking letter. I can't remember who it was. After the name of the children that he knew were observant, he wrote like Nun Yud, Nero Yoir. After their name, there are different things you write after a person's name. You write Nun Yud, Neroi Yoir, may his light shine. Or you write Shlita, Sheyichye Liyamim Toivim Aruchim, or by a woman, Shetichye. There are different types of expressions.
Nun
Reish Vav
Niturei Rachmanu Uporke.
Uporke, we translate that. May Hashem guard, Nature to guard, Rachmana, and redeem him. Okay, there are different expressions that you write after a person's name. There are different communities, they write all different types of expressions. I remember my father told me, he told me that he lived in RJJ, and they put out a very chashuv journal. It was a novelty in those days, going back a long time ago. Now everyone has journals, that was a big novelty. They had a journal, the Kol Yaakov journal, the RJJ, the yeshiva, they put out a journal. So he was, at one point in time, he was an editor of the journal. And he put after certain people nun yud, which means neiroi your ear. And my father, that's it was pashut. You write. That's the correct thing to write about a person who was alive and should live. But there were people who didn't know what it meant. There were people who did not know what nun yud stands for. Neiro your ear. And they were like, what's going on here? Is this a curse? It's like Zatzal, Olav HaSholoim? What does it mean exactly? People they were very shaken up. What does it say after my name? It says that I'm dead? Like Olav HaSholoim? What does it mean, Nun Yud? No, it's a bracha. You should live forever. Neiro Yoyer. Okay, so this Gadol, he had a whole collection of grandchildren. Children from different, from and they were in America, and he wrote them a letter, and some of them were observant, and some were not. And no one's blaming anyone. This is the reality of the world was. They were Rahman al-Son. In America, there was nothing, and the Nisyonis were impossible, and no one could blame anyone. And Rahman al-Son, he had a part of his children that he knew were not observant. And some were Oymed bin Nisoyan, and he knew what was going on. And he wrote a letter. And after the ones that were observant, he wrote Nun Yud, or whatever he wrote. And after the ones that he knew were no longer observant, he didn't write. He did not write after their name those letters that would be viewed as a bracha, they should live. He wrote them off. And the person who wrote this article, he was showing, this like an article, I don't know, one of these magazines, a long time ago, this article, he was showing that he basically knew he wrote them off. They came to America, they had no choice, living in impossible times, and they were at this point already completely not observant. He didn't bless them, they should live. It caused him such agmas nefesh that his own children, these are his own grandchildren, you're not Shema Shabbos, you're not Torah Mitzvahs, I'd say that you're not part of Judaism anymore. I have nothing to do with you. You're gone. You fade into the sunset.
I don't know if you see it today, but my mother told me about some of her, the people that she grew up with. She knew that the fathers, every once in a while, you would find somebody who said
Shavenda. My mother told me the same thing. There's a certain
right,
person.
That was the time when that was the minute. That was what they did. They taught Korean, they said Shavenda.
My grandfather was a Rebbe in RJJ. And his best Talmud went off the derech. He had his prize Talmud. He mamish went off the derech entirely. And his family.
My wife is inside.
I'm sorry. And his family that sat. My mother, they sat shiva. The family sat shiva. So different. I guess maybe when they sat shiva. Maybe when he married a non-Jew. Married a non-Jew, he sat. They sat shiva. Exactly. Today, this is unheard of.
But I mean, they could come back. You married.
They can come back. Have ma'aseh mechal yom. They have to get divorced. Ezra, look at the time of the Bayis Sheni. During the time.
I know the story where a gadol hadar in this generation, a gadol hadar did not sit shiva for his brother.
Did not. Today it's unheard of.
And the brother's family acknowledged in the New York Times that he's a brother of this Gadol Hadar.
I know exactly who you're talking about. You told me the story. I know exactly who you're talking about. It's a famous story. Today it is unheard of such a thing. And you know why? You know why? I think Lubavitch, to a very large degree. Lubavitch. Even though a lot of people they totally I'm not Lubavitch. Lubavitch, the conscience of Lubavitch has penetrated every single person in Klal Yisrael, where no Jew can be left behind. And even though I'm not Lubavitch, no, ruin my shidduchim to say I'm Lubavitch. But in your mind, like Rachmanu Litzlan, you know a person that's totally lost. Don't worry, Lubavitch will get to him. Lubavitch. I even know my family, the Reish Sharaf, okay, my great-grandfather had a brother, his name was Yecheskel. Very, very difficult times. So he became a Rav, my great-grandfather, he became a Rav in like a very modern community. His name was this is the brother of there was of Aaron Levine, and there was a brother of Yecheskel Levine, and he became my Pifer Parnas probably was starving. He became a rav somewhere, in a community, a very very modern community, and he was very loyal to them, and he actually died al kiddush Hashem. He actually went out, and he had a son. He had a son. What was his son's name? I wrote a whole book. And is there, and this rabbi, his name was Yecheskel. There was a priest. There was a church in the neighborhood, like across the street. Like you have across the street, and the balabatim of the church were not nice to the priest. Well, you know, whatever goes on in shuls goes on in churches. They talk during davening in shul. They talk during the service in the church. Everything is all the same. What goes around comes around. So there was a priest across the street in a church in the community, and the balabatim were not nice to the I don't know, bishop, whatever. Maybe he's in a cardinal. And Rabbi Cheska Levine, he went. He did something to be mechabit him, to be mechazek him. Somehow with the Pope, there's a whole story what he did. He was very much Bakir Toif to my great-grandfather's brother for helping him, for being mechazek him in whatever he needed. How did it play out? When the Nazis came to murder all the Jews, they murdered him in cold blood in front of his son. This Galach, he took Rav Yecheskel's son, one of his children, he took him and he hid him in his house. He mamish took him to save him from the Nazis. Av Akaris HaToiv, Rav Yecheskel Levine did for him. They murdered him in public, in cold blood, because he was the Rav, and he took his son to save him, and he grew up without any, he was very young then, and he had any education was nothing, because there was the war. There was during the war. He had no Yiddish education. There was no nothing, and he was there for a long time. And finally, the war was over, and then he came to America. I don't know the whole story. He came to America. He became a very distinguished economist. For the first, he went and he fought. He went to Eretz Yisrael. He fought in the what's called the Igrun.
War of Independence.
Yeah. So he fought. He became also very. He rose up in the ranks. He was very successful. And then after they established the state, he came to America, he became an economist, and he got married. He got married to a Jewish, but totally, totally irreligious. Totally irreligious. And he has children. And my family has absolutely, all the years, nothing. I don't even know he existed. So now my cousin told me, do you know, Chabad got a hold of the son of this person, and he's Shomer Shabbos. So I'm jumping for joy. I'm the last guy to join Chabad. What do I know from Chabad? I love the books. I read all the books. I read all the history books. I find it fascinating about Chabad. But I'm in practice, I'm not a Chabad guy. I like to read all the story books. But I'm not a practicing Chabad guy. But do I have the greatest simcha that Yecheskel Levine's grandson is Shomer Shabbos? Because Chabad got a hold of him, and they convinced him. You know where you come from. You're a Jew. You should be Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. It's unbelievable, unbelievable. What would be if not for Chabad? I'm sure Rabbi Cheskel Levine in Shemayim is very very happy for Chabad, and everyone is very happy. So even though everyone Chabad, all of the the whole. Listen, I'm not saying anything bad. Maybe the people, Chabad people, I have a problem with Chabad. But there are people out there, everyone knows, not everyone is so happy with Chabad. But they have penetrated the mind of every single Jew in this world to know this principle: no Jew can be left behind. And this is new. This is a new principle. Go back before World War II, it was not in the mind, it was not even a thought. No, you're gone, you're irreligious, you have no connection. What are the chances someone's going to go and wake you up, you're in a Shema, you should be Shema Shabbos? What are the chances? Zero. Today, people think themselves new. Rachmana Litzlan is not observant. He had a hard time. No one knows why. No one can tell you why, what, where. There's no such thing. No. One day he'll come back. How's he going to come back? You never know. Look, Chabad does it all the time. So new could happen to anyone. It's an incredible thing. Okay, so this. How do we get into this idea? How do we get sidetracked into this idea? Let me remember how we got sidetracked into this idea. But somehow we wound up over there. So I don't know how we got into this altogether, but we were talking over here this idea about seichel. I don't know what this means over here in this radak. The radak over here says that zehu miderech haseichel hamefursom sheroy laben lechabedes aviv ve'aved muchach lio adonim afu. It's miseichel. So what is going on over here? Why do we say miseichel? It should be a command. Obviously, the Gemara says about Dama ben Nesina. Dama ben Nesina says, we learn from there that there is such a principle. This goes against American culture today in the 21st century. There is such a principle of basic morals. According to the Radak, he's learning the pasuk. He's saying there is a basic principle. What? It's cold? I'll turn off the second one. There is a basic principle of kibud avoim. Oh. So you say something very, very good. Is that what the Radak is saying? Is there a command anywhere in the Torah for the Eved? You have an Eved Kenani. You toivel, you put the Eved Kenani in the mikvah, and you give him a bris milah, and he's your slave. He has to observe mitzvahs kenoshim. Is there anywhere in the Torah a mitzvah for the Eved Kenani to fear, a mitzvah to fear his master?
If he says a half day is a dining,
you
punish him.
He doesn't want to leave. That's when he wants to leave.
If he loves him, he doesn't want to leave.
But it's very. Is there a mitzvah to fear, a special mitzvah? When it comes to a parent, there's a mitzvah. Ish imo v'aviv tirou. When it comes to kavod, it says kabeid esavicha v'yasimecha. Is there a mitzvah anywhere b'chol haTorah kula for an eved kenani? You have a mitzvah to fear your master. A child is commanded. Again, ish imo v'aviv tirou. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa. Okay, Rashi defines what does it mean fear. Whatever that means, but there's a mitzvah to fear. Is there anywhere b'chol haTorah kula a command for an eved kenani? He has mitzvahs. An eved kenani has tvila, goes to mikvah. He has mila, and he has to observe all of the mitzvahs like an isha. That are not zman grama. He has an obligation. Is there an obligation for a slave, a mitzvah, to fear his master? I'm not aware of.
Is there such a? By a wife either.
A wife? The other way around. The man is supposed to fear the wife.
Why do we go to fear?
We're talking about a wife. It's because the pasuk goes on to say ayei morai. Ayei Morai. When it comes to us, when it says comes to a ben yichaberav, a ben gives cover to the father. The eved adonav, it doesn't say anything. It doesn't say anything between eved and adonav. So the pashto says we're repeating what yichaberav. But when the pasuk goes on, it goes on to say of ani ayei kivodi v'madonim of ani ayei morai. So the pasuk implies that the relationship between an eved and the master is a relationship of fear. Is there a mitzvah? So you want to answer that there is no mitzvah. So why does a slave fear his master? He wants to know what's good for him. It's seichel. And we're comparing kavod, we're comparing it to kavod. Okay, so we're saying that just like it's a davar sichli for a slave to fear the master, it's davar sichli for a child to give honor to his parents. He's saying something like that. Because otherwise, I mean, and you have to say that because the Gemara does say that davar ben Nesina, the Gemara approves, gives him high praise, and the proof is he was rewarded. The following year, it was born to him a paradum, and he made back all the money. The Gemara gives a stamp of approval. The Gemara is saying, that's right. It's the proper thing for a person to be mechabed their parents, even if there was no mitzvah in the Torah of kabed as alich of yasinecha. See, if you go to a different, I told you, if you go to Bnei Barak and Briska Koilel, they'll tell you you mechabed your parents. Why? Because the Torah told you to. Now let's go to a different location. Let's leave Bnei Barak. I don't know where you go. Maybe you go to America. Go to America. We'll come and you'll go to another yeshiva and they'll say to you, why did the Torah have to say kabed es avicha v'yasinecha? The answer is because you would anyway do it. You would anyway give honor. The Torah wanted to give you reward, so it made it into a mitzvah in order to, since anyway you're going to do it, Hashem wants to do with you chesed. So Hashem went, oh, you like to do this? So let me go and give you reward for doing it by making it into a mitzvah. That's an extremely different approach. Okay, you can take the approach, why are you mechabed your parents? Hashem told you, that's it. Now you can feel good about it. Or you can say, no, I'm anyway going to mechabed my parents. Even if Hashem, even if you did not command me, I would anyway do it. Great, you're going to do it, and I like that you're doing it, so let me give you reward for doing it, as it's a mitzvah yoseh. Extremely opposite approaches. And they're both valid. Eil v'il divilakim chayim. The Radak seems to be taking the second position, that it's the right thing to do. Don't be distracted by woke society. A woke society.
So why wasn't it one of the seven mitzvot
of Noach? Why isn't it the seven mitzvot of Bnei Noach?
It's a mishpah.
It could be that it is. It's included. It's one of the abizrayu. I don't know. I don't know the answer. It's a davar, maybe it's even above that. It's a davar sikhli. I don't know. But these are two approaches. The Radak obviously is working with the approach. So what he says over here is that it's a davar sikhli. And therefore, I'm demanding from you, where is my kavod? Where is my moira? Let's start over here, take a short break. Now after the break, I have over here, we have the kinnis. So we have 4 days left. I don't know if we'll take 4 days through the kinnis, we'll see. But let's today start reviewing the kinois for Tisha B'Av. We'll start with the beginning, with the night of Tisha B'Av, and we'll see how far we get. Okay, we will continue in a few moments. Those who are online, if you have a kinois handy, that would be very helpful. If you have at home the kinois of Tisha B'Av. We're now going to have a keynote address.
A keynote address
after everyone breaks for coffee, for gasoline. I heard they were doing a video for the Chofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation. They were videotaping. They do it in advance, it's recorded. And they bring all the rabbanim to these very beautiful studios, and Rav Pesach Krohn was darshaning in preparation for the video that would be displayed on Tisha B'Av. And in the middle of his address, he takes a cup of water, and he sips a cup of water. So he said, cut, can't do that on Tisha B'Av. True story. It's not going to go well on Tisha B'Av, having him all over the country, and he takes like so.
There's a script for that. It's called continuity.
Shua.
Slowly over the years, Rabbi Alman has to get a good pension because they have a minimal pension and not a great pension. They have to help with the building of the move and then house. So I don't think he got that.
Okay, everybody's supposed to begin. If everyone, Kinnis? Kinnis. Can everyone say everyone have a Kinnis? We have here.
There's a few more over here.
Okay, everybody, so we're learning Kinnis. If you have at home a Kinnis, it would be very helpful if you could follow along in the Kinnis.
Right. Should be just like, you know, right at 8 o'clock, they shouldn't.